One of baseball's classic rhubarbs erupted last night in an interleague game between the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim, yes, that's what they really call themselves, and the Washington Nationals. At a critical moment in the game, Anaheim relief pitcher Brendan Donnelly strolled out from the bullpen, and Nats manager Frank Robinson asked the umpires to examine his glove for what the rulebook delicately describes as foreign substances. The umps found a small deposit of pine tar and instantly threw Donnelly out of the game. Angry arguments ensued before the Nationals eventually came back to win. Afterwards, Donnelly explained the pine tar.
Just to get a grip, keep your fingers dry. I mean, yeah, everybody knows that I sweat a lot. Y'all have seen it. You know, I'm fairly fat and I sweat a lot. And, you know, it's just to keep things dry, whatever. I'm not trying to cheat or doctor the ball, do whatever the hell they're thinking over there. That's not the case.
So it's illegal, he seemed to say, but not cheating. Where's the line between colorful eccentricity and cheating in baseball? Is a pine tar ball okay and a spitter beyond the pale? What about stealing signs, deking, or peeking? And are the umpires the appropriate arbiters here, or does this fall under the jurisdiction of baseball's unwritten rules? Give us a call, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. And we welcome back our baseball pal, Alan Schwartz, senior writer for Baseball America. He's with us from his home office in New York City. Nice to have you back on the program, Alan.
Well, thank you, Neil. Good to be here.
Both Brendan Donnelly and his manager, Mike Socha, said after the game last night, well, yeah, basically this is against the rules, but a little pine tar is no big deal.
Yeah, and to be honest, it's hard to really know to what extent he may or may not have used it to gain a competitive advantage. Of course, that's what the rules are for. It's to make sure that no one gets a competitive advantage that's undetectable and against the rules. You know, whether it's corking a bat or applying a foreign substance to the baseball or, you know, cutting a baseball with a thumbtack, which has been done in the past and frankly been done all throughout history.
Mm-hmm.
So in this case, it's a little hard to know if he really does sweat a lot. I can attest to the fact that Brendan Donnelly is a little fat, as he claims. But whether or not he's using the pine tar there in order to, you know, not slicken the ball, I'm a little skeptical, but you know, it's plausible, I guess.
Well, one of the problems you have with this is that right behind that mound in every ballpark in the country, there's a rosin bag. Rosin is not a foreign substance?
No, it is not, because it is something which is applied, you know, fairly by the rules to by everybody and is designed so that people of various girths can get sweat off their fingertips. So, you know, it makes his explanation a little suspicious, obviously. But I think that certainly it's not quite as egregious as some of the, you know, cheating that has taken place in the past. You have corked bats. You have thumbtacks, like I said. I mean, managers have gotten into the act. Maury Wills at one point decided to change the dimensions of the batter's box while managing the Seattle Mariners in order to get a competitive advantage. I mean, there's been a lot of things with doctoring the field, you know, so that, you know, the ground balls didn't travel as quickly against a ground ball pitcher. So there's all sorts of stuff like this. Is it charming to an extent? Yeah, maybe, but not when the guy just outright cheats, and that's what we're concerned about here.
Our number, if you'd like to join this conversation, is 800-989-8255. You can also email us, totn@npr.org. John is calling in from Moab in Utah.
Good afternoon.
Hi.
I'll tell you what, I used to pitch, and I don't know, a little pine tar never hurt nobody. To be honest with you, I realize there is rules, so and rules have to be followed, and at least to make the game fair for everyone. But I have a concern, which is if you've got a rosin bag available, and you know you can keep your hands dry with that. What's the deal with the pine tar?
Well, one's in the rules and one isn't. But
exactly.
John, you said did you use pine tar when you pitched?
I no comment.
For whom did you pitch?
Just a college, a local college.
And if you use pine tar, then is it okay for batters to cork their bats?
I don't think it's okay to use pine tar in the sense that if there's a rule against it, there is a rule. And it's unfortunate, but it's a game, and games have rules, and the rules are part of the game. Just
right.
Like, say, the bases, touching a base is part of the rules.
Well, let's just use a hypothetical here. Let's just say you decided to use pine tar.
Mm-hmm.
What would the effect be on the ball? Would it help you control the pitch or make the pitch uncontrollable and hard to hit?
It would actually make it more controllable and would make it safer for the batter.
That's what I was thinking, because most pitchers use Vaseline or some sort of petroleum jelly to make the pitches slip out of their hands and act more like a knuckleball that spins less. I would think a ball with pine tar would be stickier and spin more. Then again, if you're trying to get a tight spiral on a slider, perhaps this would help. What do you think?
I think that sweaty fingers would be dangerous to the batter. I actually agree with the pitcher on this.
Well, a batter might say a pitcher with more control can then pick that outside corner. Play by the rules, and maybe you'll slip and throw one over the middle of the plate, and I can hit it.
It's better than your forehead.
All right, John. Thanks very much for the
phone
call. Alan, we cannot mention pine tar without remembering George Brett and Goose Gossage and the famous pine tar game. At that time, there was a rule that hitters cannot have any pine tar on their bats above a certain point. If recollection serves, it was 17 inches. In other words, okay on the handle of the bat to get a better grip, but not on the barrel of the bat. Brett hit a home run to put the Royals ahead. Yankee manager Billy Martin asked the umps to check his bat, where they found pine tar over the line, disallowed the homer, threw him out of the game, and one of the great arguments ever ensued.
No, that's true. I mean, it was very hard to imagine George Brett having an aneurysm right there on the field. And it was pretty amazing, though, because, of course, they went back and reversed the umpire's call. And, the Yankees ended up losing the game, which was pretty preposterous because it was against the rules. And Tim McClellan did apply the rule appropriately. Billy Martin was right. Billy Martin, by the way, was the same guy who caught Maury Wills doctoring the batter's box in 1981. So Billy was pretty up on the rules.
But Billy was not above bending them himself.
Well, that's more about drinking heavily after hours.
Well, those rules, too. But let me ask you a question. One of the great there's nothing in the rule book about signs in baseball, the third base coach flashing the signs to the hitter, the catcher flashing the signs to the pitcher about which pitch to throw. But it has been an eternal sport in baseball of stealing the other guy's signs and trying to figure out what's going on.
Sure. I mean, there, of course, is the famous story now of the New York Giants in 1951, the team so forever known as being the one for which Bobby Thompson hit the home run, the shot heard around the world, one of the greatest comebacks in baseball history when they came back from something like 13.5 games behind the Dodgers. And apparently they were stealing signs in the Polo Grounds. They had an elaborate system whereby a coach in the clubhouse sat, and the clubhouses in the Polo Grounds were in deep center field. And the coach would sit in deep center field using a telescope or binoculars or something that would, he would determine what the catcher was calling. And then he would use some sort of a buzzer or a bell to let another person near the dugout or somebody get, what pitch it was, maybe one for a fastball, two for a curve, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
And they would relay that to the hitter. Now, Bobby Thompson maintains to this day that he did not make a loser out of Ralph Branca on one of those types of pitches, but certainly it's come to light, and I believe there's going to be a very nicely done book by the Wall Street Journal's Joshua Prager all about that season and sign stealing in general, and I'm certainly looking forward to it.
Well, whatever Bobby Thompson, the home run might not have meant very much. They wouldn't have played the game had not all those signs been stolen in the previous month. Let's get another caller on the line. Jack is with us. Jack from Annapolis, Maryland.
Hello.
Hi.
My comment today would be that I think our culture is teaching young people to try to cheat without getting caught routinely. For example, this week on the Bob Costas show on HBO, we have basketball players showing how to turn your back to the umpire and grab the guy and pull him into you to draw the foul, even though you're the one fouling. Or we foul out on or foul people on purpose in basketball to get the clock to stop. Or numerous youth league coaches as well as college and professional coaches, again, just teach the bottom of the pile in football, go ahead and take an extra hit when the umpire can't see you. So we're teaching kids and young people more and more to try to break rules, and you can't get caught for your own advantage.
Yeah, the only rule then is don't get caught, Alan.
Well, I mean, that's the old saying, it ain't cheating if you don't get caught, which, of course, is preposterous. I mean, it's cheating no matter what, and it's not like a tree falling in the woods. It's not quite that existential. But I do have a bit of a problem with the suggestion that, our culture is so much worse than cultures that have come before it. Certainly the media through which we deliver these messages is more immediate and more widespread. I think that cultures far and wide for centuries and centuries and centuries have, understood the value of cheating. I mean, we now remember speakeasies, of course, of being so charming, and Babe Ruth being drunk for half of the 1920s, when, of course, it was illegal to do that. I think our morals change and our rules change over time, but our willingness to break them really doesn't.
Oh, that's certainly true, and I think that, you know, if any freshmen, like all our philosophy class, will talk about that cheating only works if only one person cheats, though. If everybody's cheating in a game of poker, then the game ceases to be worthwhile to play because nobody can win or lose, and that is as the complication, as you said. So we evolve how we cheat, but it's nothing that's new and nothing that's going to stop. We just keep trying to make the rule book thicker to preclude it in the future.
Which raises the question, and Jack, thanks very much for the phone call, which raises the question of where are these rules enforced? Is the commissioner's office, well, I guess if you violated a rule, that's where it's going to be adjudicated, but if you're caught stealing signs or peeking at the catcher to see what the next pitch is going to be inside or outside, a lot of those things, Alan, are taken care of by the players themselves.
Well, that's true. In fact, I don't believe that there is any rule against stealing signs. I mean, I know that there is a rule against technology in the dugout.
Right.
Okay, you're not allowed to have a television. You're not allowed to have any sort of means of communication, cell phone and whatnot, in large part to avoid situations like this. But, you know, a player stealing signs, it's his prerogative. Of course, he might get a fastball in the noggin the next time he's up. And these are sort of the eternal law enforcing practices of the game. But they are not against the rules necessarily. And that's one of the interesting things about baseball is you do have this culture of retribution and of lawlessness and lawfulness, certainly less so in the American League with the designated hitter. We
right.
all know that. But, you know, in the National League, certainly it's a bit more of that rough-and-tumble pure baseball that people remember.
Alan, it's a delight to talk about foreign substances that don't come in a syringe.
Absolutely. Thank you, Neil.
Alan Schwartz, a senior writer for Baseball America, also a columnist for the New York Times Sunday Sports section, and co-author of The Juice, The Real Story of Baseball's Drug Problems. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News.